the Big Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week's huge technological stories, none of which are about me getting going on time. It is now half an hour after we should have started, and I have screwed around relentlessly, it has to be said. Thank you very much to Miss Kelly Gamont here, bottom left. She has stepped in at the last moment because something's come up. We've had three people drop out in the last 30 minutes tonight, so the fact I've got four people is actually friggin' amazing. Unbelievable. Unheard of, unparalleled even. Joining me to discuss the big tech stories of the week, starting off top left, a man who hasn't been here for quite a while, Gary Holtzman.
Hey, hello. Well, thanks for having me back.
Mate,
should I take that as a hint why I haven't been here since last time?
Dude.
What I say.
I know, well, I'm crap at bookings. As I've displayed adequately this evening,
I've got to chase you down. Is that what you're saying?
We got talking, and the thing is, we started the Help Show. I don't know if you've seen any of the episodes yet. And the Help Show, as soon as we talked about it, I thought we could do with someone who's kind of like a hardware tech as well. And you're a hardware tech. And I said, why don't you come on the Help Show? And you said, yeah, God, I'd love to. And then I said, well, you ought to come on the Big Show again soon as well. So, and that's kind of how you turned up at it. So,
yeah, and I'm looking forward to the Help Show with being the hardware tech. Are you going to talk about Macs there too?
Everything's on offer. It could be phones. It could be a stereo.
As much of a hardware tech as you think I am, then.
Well, no, you're the man that's got the tips and all the tricks and all that kind of stuff.
You did say tips, right?
Tips, yeah. Okay. And tricks out there. Blowing how to get dust out of your computer in Arizona.
Yes. Well, we do have the leaf blower.
You do. That's it. You've given that tip away then already. You could have held that for next week, mate. You could have held it for next week.
Oh, I've got lots and lots of them.
I'm sure you have.
No shortage of
them. I don't doubt it. Next to him, Jeff Gamet. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right, and it's good to see you.
You're kind of jumpy tonight, but you're in crystal vision again. That new router.
Hold on. Let me quit my mail app. Maybe that.
Let me quit downloading all the porn.
Yeah, right. Like, that's going to stop.
Good lad. What have you been up to, mate?
I've been very busy the last few weeks. Lots of running around.
Now, we would have had Dave Hamilton on with us this week as well, another person from the Mac Observer. Apart from him and Paul Wheatley got the difference between tonight and next week mixed up.
Well, that new method is pretty hard.
It is. It's tough. Yeah. Scottish accent. That's the trouble. Next to Jeff, it's Righty Boy.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. How's Norwich?
Norwich is fine, boy. Oh, no, I shouldn't do that. That's so wrong. You do that to me, you know.
I do. You come on with me and you think of your sister.
You don't do that to me. You do that to me.
All right. So what's been happening in the world of support at universities?
Oh, I've been trying to sort out streaming a live operation. Next Thursday.
Mate, I've spent 5 years trying to do it and I still can't get it right.
We're going to do a live operation from an operating theatre next Thursday and it's just been a nightmare.
And who are you streaming it to?
It's a local hospital and it's streamed to an assembled crowd. I'm thinking of coming in, we're going to stream it and there's going to be a two-way audio thing and he's going to be getting the old scalpel in. I'm going to come with an air horn and he's going to go, whoops!
But lovely. Nice. Thanks, mate. You'll have to tweet out where your feed goes and then we can all tune in. I'll do a live commentary on what's going on.
Live bladder removal.
And then you'll realise why I'm not a doctor. And last but by no means least, Kelly G. Darling, you're looking gorgeous in the little black dress there. So there's probably no dress, it's just little black number.
Yeah.
How are you?
Not too bad.
Is Portland feeling the heat?
Weird calls from England in the middle of the afternoon. You know, it happens.
Yes, but the police are catching up to me slowly. How's Portland for weather at the moment? Is it good or is it hot or is it sunny or is it snowing?
We had two gorgeous days and today's going to be, it's a little overcast, rain sprinkles, and then tomorrow it's going to be nice again, so.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff. The Week in Tech, yes. What's been going on? Well, there's a furore going on in the UK over Uber cars, and everyone that went to Macworld will know what an Uber is. And also, there's a story about them and New York and getting a child seat. And also, Edward Snowden has managed to pop out a few more bits of and pieces that he probably shouldn't, and we'll have a chit-chat about that. So, The Week in Tech, who's starting us off this week? Who's got a story for us that will rock us and get us going?
By me.
All right, no one. Jesus. Well, I'll tell you what, I never start, so I'm going to start.
Ooh.
And I'm going to be a little bit contentious. Perhaps. An avalanche of Snowden documents will go online next week, according to Engadget. Scroll to the bottom of Glenn Greenwald's blistering response to recent remarks by just-retired NSA chief Keith Alexander, and you'll find some very interesting news indeed. Greenwald, who shared the Pulitzer Prize for his coverage of Edward Snowden's NSA surveillance revelations, says he plans to publish previously unpublished NSA documents online next Tuesday, May the 13th, with free access to everyone. I've got to say, I thought at the start Snowden was doing us all a real favour. Good lad, well done. But I'm at the point now where I'm sitting thinking, this ain't right. He's done enough. There's a lot of damage probably going to happen as a result of what he's going to carry on doing. The fact that he's in Russia as well, I mean, who knows what information they're getting out of him at the moment. I don't know. Free thoughts here, fellas and girls. What do you think about Snowden? Is it a positive thing or is it a negative thing? My vote's going with negative at the moment, I have to say.
I think it was positive, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It kind of gave us an idea of what was going on.
Well, someone needed to out the NSA for what they were doing. Yeah. Because it's wrong.
But now it's up to us now, isn't it?
What do you mean it's up to us? What secrets have you got, right? Jesus. Well, it gets taken off the air, mate. I'll have a death squad through the door in a moment.
Well, no, it's just one of those things now. We weren't kind of aware of the depths of the kind of spying that was going on, but it's this kind of thing about privacy and everything now. It says that we are being kind of spied on everywhere we go. So surely it's up to us now to, if we're broadcasting everything that we do, it's up to us to kind of be wary of what we do say about ourselves online.
Everyone else is really quiet. Why? You guys are the ones that are suffering, not me.
I was being polite and just waiting my turn.
It's your turn, Jeff. Go ahead.
Oh, all right. Well, then I think what Snowden did was a good thing.
Yeah.
And the good will inevitably be followed by the bad, because once the information starts coming out, it just keeps flowing. And it will lead to problems for different governments, different government agencies, and individuals. And unfortunately, that part can't be helped, because the information that's coming out, that's just going to be one of the side effects. However, had that information stayed secret, then we would have had a serious, ongoing, and growing problem with online privacy, civil rights. I think that we would have been looking at some point at trying to figure out how to salvage the United States Constitution out of this, and the answer would be, well, actually, you can't. It's already been dismantled. So, yes, there's some bad that's come out of this, and that's unfortunate, but it needed to come out. So I'm glad that Snowden went ahead and did that.
So are you saying it's time for Snowden to be given some clemency and come back into the fold and bring his information with him and hands up and say things have got to be rectified? Or are you saying he's got to stay out in the wild and he's got to keep leaking?
Well, I'm assuming that he's handed over all the information to someone, and that's who's managing how this information gets distributed. He can't come back. I'm not saying that, like, I forbid you to come back, but he can't come back. It's just, that's not an option, because regardless of right or wrong, he committed treason. So if he comes back to the United States, he's pretty screwed.
Yeah, good point. Anyone else?
Well, I mean, hasn't Julian Assange already crossed this bridge? I mean, is this... I don't even understand why he just doesn't go through WikiLeaks, other than he's just getting attention to himself. So whether people think what he did was right or wrong, my argument is, what did he have to gain? So at this point, I'm starting to question that myself, because initially when he gives up his citizenship and he can't come back, and, you know, his treason's a pretty big deal, what did he have to gain? And regardless if you think he did it for the right reasons or the wrong reasons, it clearly wasn't a financial gain, but I don't think it was fame. But now that he's doing this, I've got to wonder, maybe it is for the fame. Maybe the attention's dying down and now he's starving for the attention again. Is that why the release is timed the way it is? And why not just slip that through WikiLeaks and not know that it's coming from him? Why is it so important that he knows it's coming from him? So I'm on the fence about it. I don't know enough about it really, know for sure one way or the other, but it does draw some concern.
Chat room saying a lot more than you buggers are. not buffering here. No, that's a different kind. My money's on Snowden leaking stuff about the Russians. I don't know where Bronwyn's getting that one from. Jufo Jim says, not buffering here at all. He also says Snowden had nothing to gain. It was a truly altruistic move to start with.
That's what I think, is that when he did it, he wasn't doing it for personal gain. He was doing it for my gain as an American to know what it was that was happening that I didn't know about. And I feel like there's occasionally people who shine a little sunlight where there needs to be some, and he's doing it on kind of an epic scale. I kind of agree with, like, I don't understand why it's continuing and why it needs to be something that comes from him, unless it's just that because it's got his name on it, it's going to automatically garner a certain amount of attention, which is sort of what I think is probably happening, because he still gets attention for being who he is. So I think there's maybe a certain amount of that, because everybody's sort of moved on from WikiLeaks. Like, if there was WikiLeaks news now, how many people would care and how many people would just roll their eyes? And I think he's still kind of not yet to the eye rolling part. And so that's where more of this is coming from. And honestly, given what I have been led to believe is the amount of information that he has, I think that dumping it all at once, the way the WikiLeaks stuff did, probably wouldn't be useful. So that's probably why it's getting parsed out. I would like to think that this is why it's happening, is just, like, it's altruistic. It's something he's doing not for himself, but for me and Jeff and every other American who had no idea that this is what was going on. And I hope that that's the case. I want to believe that it's because of that, and that he's using his name now that everybody knows who he is and what he's about, that he's leaving his name attached so that it will continue to get attention.
Jim in the chat room saying no releases. The releases are segmented to keep the press interested and keep the stories in the public eye, which is a great point. I think that's probably true. And Matt's following up. That's the fundamental difference between Assange and Snowden, in my humble opinion, which I think is that it was an altruistic act on his part to begin with, at least, anyway. Snowden probably needs some attention so he can get out of Russia, says Jim. That's possible. See, that's the thing. I think that if you want to draw a parallel here, I reckon Snowden is like Jesse at the end of Breaking Bad. He's chained up and he's cooking meth somewhere in Russia.
I've not seen it.
Against his will. I haven't given anything away there.
Okay.
No. You kind of know Jesse's in the meth business pretty early on in Breaking Bad. I think you're not giving anything away.
I don't think he's sitting drinking Bollinger and eating beluga caviar anywhere at all.
Oh, I don't think that either, but I also don't think that he's Jesse at the end of Breaking Bad. But I don't think he's a rock star by any means. I don't think he's living any sort of high life. But again, I'm an optimist. I want to believe that this is what's happening. I want to believe that he's leaving his name attached so that it gets attention. I want to believe that the reason things are going down the way they are is to keep people interested so that people will still continue to hear, oh, you know, you thought the last thing was bad. Like, now listen to what the government is doing to you. And the awareness that is being raised as a result I think is the part that is hopeful to me, that people will care. And, you know, and again, it's a name recognition thing. And the sad thing to me is that realistically, I don't think there's very much that's going to happen given what America knows about all of this data, because there's a new season of Survivor on and people are more interested in that.
Ooh, that's harsh, but that's true. It's harsh, but true.
No, harsh is if I'd made a Kardashian joke or said it was something to do with the fact that Honey Boo Boo got renewed.
It's Are you really, kidding me?
Honey Boo Boo, I feel like there's a lot of cynicism about this. People just don't care. Yeah, the government's going to listen to my phone calls. Okay. And then, oh, but Survivor, I'd better be watching that. You know, because there's a lot of slacktivism. Like, I changed my Facebook picture. What more do you want from me? Is a really prevalent attitude in the United States. And I really wish that weren't the case.
Bronwyn says, I only got away with the reference to Breaking Bad because A, she's finished it, and B, I've got pretty eyes. And Jufro Jim wants to believe. Snowden is dead, says Pete. It's a tweet bot. I don't know. I think there's a bit more to rumble on this one, but I think you've got to be careful about how much Snowden took with him, how much he's leaking out, but how much he's giving to the Russians, because I'm sure he's staying free. I'm sure he's being waterboarded in some degree. Never mind. Whose story's next then? Because that was really boring.
I got a couple of short stories here.
Okay, Mr. Holtzman, save us.
And stop me if you've heard this before. Here, let me be all proper.
I see.
There we go.
Now Holtzman's crossed 40, and he's a blind old git now, just like me.
I'm sorry. Speak up. What was that?
Yeah. I love how he's wearing earphones and cups his ear.
Yeah. You like that?
Yeah, proper radio.
It was either that or we're getting the horn.
Moving on.
Story about the PayPal hired this guy to be their new strategy exec. And within the first week, he gets, you know, he's celebrating in Mardi Gras. And he's got a phone, apparently, he's not familiar with. And he's just saying terrible things about people that work at PayPal and tweeting them out instead of sending them as a private message. And they're like drunken tweets. Rakesh Agrawal. The story is that PayPal's new director of strategy, Rakesh Rocky Agrawal, is interviewing. The company publicly confirmed that the relatively new hire is no longer with the company after sending a series of bizarre and insulting tweets last night. Agrawal joined PayPal in March after working for many years as a consultant to payments and commerce companies. Hired as their director of strategy, he said at the time he would be tasked with helping small businesses and entrepreneurs understand online commerce and payments. And the hire was made despite previous disparaging comments from Agrawal about the company's point-of-sale system, which he presumably had to educate small businesses about. The honeymoon was short after having the best night of his life, in quotes, at Jazz Fest in New Orleans. Agrawal sent a binge of offensive and mostly incomprehensible tweets. Those tweets, some of which insulted PayPal Vice President of Global Communications, Christina Smedley, were deleted, but not before the internet got a hold of them. Oh. And this morning he blamed some of the tweets on a different Twitter interface on his Galaxy S5.
Uh-huh.
PayPal Twitter? Confirmed Agrawal has left the company in a tweet of its own. And for what it's worth, he seems to have offered his services to Foursquare, promising he could make it a, quote, $50 billion company. No word on whether or not they're interested in retaining his services.
I'm sure he has a great future in social networking consulting.
Oh, yeah, so, that's going to be a stain on your resume, huh?
No, that's the TechCrunch article that you've read almost verbatim there. Carrie, I mean, have we actually salvaged any of these tweets? Because I can't. There's none on the story.
Oh, they're around. There's screenshots.
Do we have paraphrases that may or may not be true, but closest to the gist of it? Because I don't want to get a libel suit or anything. But
yeah, the actual tweets are in Business Insider. If you click on the link in the TechCrunch article, mm-hmm. the highlighted part where it mentions the word tweets that's highlighted, it takes you to those tweets.
The TechCrunch article doesn't say tweets. It says offensive and incomprehensible tweets. Oh, I got you.
Yeah, okay. Click on that. There you go.
Okay. So the
And then if you scroll to the bottom of that next page, you'll see a bunch of, and they're in larger font. And it does actually look like he's talking to somebody. He doesn't, I mean, why would you broadcast out? I'm at the Hyatt Regency New Orleans. I mean, why would you tweet that out? It does seem like something you'd send
drunk
to somebody
people
privately.
Do stupid stuff.
Yeah, I mean, most of my teenage years were spent drunk. So done working
There's
for the weekend.
Great auto correction in some of these.
Jazz fest time. I can't wait to explain this. You know what I'm talking about. And he's holding three fingers up. Whether he's suggesting he's going to be a spinner in the next. That looks like a faked picture. His face looks badly lit. That's a Lee Harvey Oswald image right there.
I agree. That first picture doesn't look right.
That's not right. Best night of my life. Look forward meeting you, pool. Seats just Bryce Dens. I'm at Hyatt Regency. Duck you, Smedley, you useless middle manager. Christina Smedley is a useless piece of shit. There was no autocorrect on that, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that one seemed to come through real clear.
People who should be fired from PayPal, Don Christmas, a pooler kick.
That was the thing that I was really impressed by, was like, somehow people managed to be offended even though, like, the names got auto-corrected into other things. And it, to me, it was just really funny. I was like, I'm trying to figure out how you get mad about that if it's not, it can't even pretend to be English.
Don Christmas is my son. How dare you, you bastard. just here, Ed, tram team for my new startup, redesign.ckm. Oh, I quit pay a night because of shelf and sun and aortic and ayur and hill e asth. Shit if you had net. I think that last line was Egyptian. he spelled hydrate right, which is pretty impressive in that state. The Twitter interface and Android and GS5 is shockingly different from my phone. Yes, it makes specific comments about your boss that you happen to have at that time and there's no connection. My sincere apologies to David Marcus, Stan Chidovsky, who wants to be Christmas. You guys are among the two smartest guys I know and brilliant people. Day one of my next adventure, so I'm ducking tired. He's blown that big time, hasn't he?
A bit.
Yep. This is not going to reflect well on his next job evaluation.
Sorry, Jeff, just to think earlier this week I was looking for a Twitter client that only DMs for my assistant to use anything out there. Oh, mate, you haven't got social at all, have you?
Well, there was another story like this where a Google tech strategist who invited himself to a conference in San Francisco to be the keynote speaker. He like tweeted, hey, there's still a spot for speakers, hint, hint. So they invited him. He shows up at the expo, and 30 minutes before he's scheduled to speak, he storms out. He says, I'm Google. And this Google doesn't play to small groups. You know, you can't be bothered with it less than 50 people. And he walked out and left them without a presenter for that he invited himself to.
Wow.
That's horrible.
So this is, it is Google software designer, blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to see what his name is. Google strategist Scott Jensen reportedly left 30 minutes before he was scheduled to speak. Jensen was due to give the keynote talk at the Internet of Things Expo, to which he had invited himself. Witnesses told the Silicon Valley website that Jensen stormed out of the Marriott Hotel in San Francisco Fisherman's Wharf area and told a woman at the registration desk, I am Google. Mr. Jensen then followed this up with an apparent explanation of his decision to walk out, saying, quote, I do not speak to small groups.
Wow.
There he is.
You like that?
That's a beautiful
thing.
Wow. There you go. That's Tosser of the Month. He's got a vastly inflated opinion of himself, hasn't he?
I am Google.
Well, and I can't,
he is, after all, Google.
Google me.
I am Google, yeah.
I can't believe as well, Carrie, you made me click on a frigging Daily Mail link.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that.
Oh, Jesus.
You know it's legit.
I've stayed near there. That was behind the hotel that I stayed in when I was at Macwell for one night.
Did you storm out?
No, it's a Sift hotel.
Oh, okay.
You can catch me there again.
Of course he didn't. He's not Google.
I stayed because I'm free.
That's right.
It was free. Absolutely free. Good stories, mate. Good use of social media there. If you're looking for to write a book on social media fails, I think you've got a good start there. Ewan is Batman, says Bookery. I have no idea what that's in reference to. And apparently Matt is Bing. As in Crosby, maybe? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. We need a Tosser of the Month column, says Jufro Jim. I think we could do that. We should have a Tosser of the Month competition. And right now, that boy from Google is way, way in the lead.
Oh, competition's pretty fierce right now, I think.
The only problem is the competition he's going to receive from me each month, according to the emails I get anyway. Now, while we're doing this, let's do something really, really important, because I'm just thinking about emails from people who are complete wankers.
Did I email you again, Ewan?
Now, that was me.
If you remember, we had an email the other week that from a nice chap, Dominic, who said, I'm just don't want to see anyone get into trouble. Are you sure that your Patreon draw thing isn't a lottery? And then we had one complete arsehole who said, I'm going to report you to the Gambling Commission. So we thought that we'd check. So I rang up the Gambling Commission. Said, listen, we're doing this thing. Is that all right? Is it not all right? He said, no, it's a free prize draw. So here you go. Here is the free prize draw, the giveaway for Patreon. If you want to support us for Patreon, Patreon is a way of giving us a bit of cash to help. We talked about moving the studio around before the show started. That cost me money. I have to pay for lights. I have to pay for microphones. I have to pay for screens. I have to pay for mixers and all that kind of stuff. We're going to go to video with the Pocket Show and the Gamer Show. So Paul Wheatley is going to have to convert his house into a little bit of a studio when he gets some bandwidth once in a while. And we'll be away and running. We need a bit of help to do that. So if you'd like to help us out, then you can be a Patreon subscriber. All you've got to do is go to patreon.com/BritishTechNetwork and sign up. And every month you can give us $1, you can give us $2, you can give us $5, you can give us $15, which a few people have. Thank you very much. A couple of people have given us $20. That's very kind. Thank you very much. And one person who is the Network Union has sponsored the entire giveaway process, and they're giving us $85 a month for the privilege of doing it, on top of the fact that they provide us with all the broadband into the house and everything for the video shows. So please support the Network Union. We'll do a little ad for them a bit later on. But at the moment, we're going to draw the winner. We're going to find out who's won the swag bag from Macworld. It's a tense moment. Now, what I've got is a web tool, a mini web tool, where I've pasted in all the names of all the people. And you're saying, well, that's not fair, because Stephen Convery there, look, he's got his name in loads of times. So's Teresa Hummel. Well, actually, what this is the... I've clicked on the wrong thing. There we go. It's back. So basically, if you donate $1, then you get one entry in this. Yep. So all the people that are here once have got $1 in it. If you've got $10, then you get 10 entries in the competition. And if you've got $15, you get 15 entries in the competition. And these are all the people that donated through the PayPal process as well, not just the ones that have donated through the Patreon. So anyone who donates or subscribes to the network in any form gets entries into the competition. So there you go. Those are all the names. And all I've got to do is click on a button here that says pick a random name. And it's done, and it's running, and it's running, and it's running. And the winner is Ian Ross. Well done, Ian Ross.
Yay!
Ian.
You've won the bag. I'll be getting in touch with you via email, and you're going to have to send me your address, but you, pal, have won the swag from Macworld.
Approximate value, $11 squillion.
Well, no, it's not bad at all, actually. I mean, there's a stand in there from 12 South that's worth 70 quid, so...
That thing is packed full of all kinds of stuff.
I know,
because 80% of what you're giving away is stuff that I huffed home myself.
Yes.
In the speaker bag.
There you go.
Including the bag. So,
I want that.
I'm sorry, but you can't win it, Righty. Oh, Jackie Hearn has given us some money as well, and she can't win it because she's doing the House of Cards show, which is just in its third episode this evening, and it's going to get posted on iTunes as well. So there you go. Ian Ross, well done, mate. You were picked at random, live on air, and I just want to prove that it was a random pickery thing, because here it is. Look, there's the mini web tool that says random name picker, and you paste them all in, and it picks the number out. So all I've done is made a kinky mask to go on the top of it that shows it. So there you go. Thanks to Network Union for sponsoring that draw as well as. Now, you're sitting thinking, okay, well, there's no point in sponsoring you anymore. Well, there is, because actually it's May now, because that was the April draw. The May draw, the free prize draw, is for... we're going to pick three winners on the next one. We're going to pick one winner for a copy of Clean My Mac 2 and also Hyder 2 from MacPaw Software. Then we've got two more copies of each of those pieces of software and two more copies for each of those software to give away.
Oh, so
there's three lots of software. There's over 300 quid's worth of software there to give away. And also, one of the people that's very kindly supported the network, he's also a Patreon subscriber, is Ian Lewis. Now, this guy is possibly, I would say, the best landscape photographer I've ever seen. And I got to say, I pick a lot of fault with photographs. And I don't pick a lot of fault with Ian's. I think they're superb, absolutely brilliant. I really, really rate him. And what he's given us is a picture of a leaf that he took, and the picture is stunning. And he's had it made into a Jella skin to go on an iPad Air. So if you own an iPad Air, write to us, and we'll be giving that away this month as well. So if you're a Patreon subscriber, you get entered into the MacPaw draw and you'll get a piece of software. And if you're a Patreon subscriber and you've got an iPad Air, send me an email and I'll make sure you go into the draw. I'm not going to do that on the same kind of random system because not everybody's going to have an iPad Air. So it's only the people that bother to write in from the Patreon list who have an iPad Air. If you send that in and just say, I've got an iPad Air, then I will put you in the draw for the thing from Ian. And it is a beautiful, beautiful image. I'll show it to you tomorrow on the Mac Show. It's absolutely gorgeous. So please support us at Patreon. It makes a huge difference to us. You might think, well, you know, it's only $2. What the hell does $2 make? Well, when 200 of you are giving $2, it makes an enormous difference.
It's huge.
We get loads. We get loads and loads and loads, which we've got. I think we're over $380 at the moment, and we've only been going for 3 weeks. So please keep going. If we get past $2,000, you get no adverts. And if we go past $12,000, we're going to go to South by Southwest. We're going to go to the Gadget Show. We're going to go to all the major shows and provide you with live coverage like we did at Macworld. And I'm already checking the prices for the flights for Mac next year. And I think that might be going. I think. Definitely. Of course I'm going. Who the hell am I kidding? Jesus Christ. I think there might be a few more going next year, to be fair. So there you go. Ian Ross, get in touch, buddy. We need your address. I hope you're close because then I can drive it to you. But if you're not, I hope he's not in Australia. I've got to send a 30-kilo bag to Australia. That's not going to be cheap. That's going to be the entire fund that we've got from Patreon. I hadn't thought about that.
A couple of years ago at Macworld, we had a meetup that was sponsored by HP, and they gave away a couple of these really awesome printers. And you can email something to the printer, and it'll print it out.
Yeah.
And one of the people that won was in Poland.
Oh, crap.
And so the HP people were all like, congratulations.
No, to be fair, we had one person in Australia win one of the 12 South prizes. And 12 South, mm-hmm. good as gold, sent it to Australia. And he never picked it up from the post office. So
no,
they sent it back and they charged 12 South for sending it back. And I was besides myself. So we're going to do a 12 South competition in a little while, I hope. And hopefully, they're definitely going to send it to me and I'm going to pick up the postage costs. So there we go. And also, if you want a professional photographer, then give me a shout because I'm sponsoring all the postage. iSkelter are also giving us a bit of sponsorship for July, and it's going to be, or June, July, it's going to be absolutely superb. It's going to be their Slate Go. And if you haven't seen the Slate Go, go to iSkelter.com and have a look, and you could win one of those. And it doesn't matter what your PC Mac format is, you will love it. It is beautiful.
I want it.
So, yes, please support us. Thank you very much. Right, who's got another story?
Go on then, Governor.
Righty.
I think I've not made it a secret in the past that I'm a huge Chrome user. And I think I've said in the past that I can use Chrome across all devices. But this week, Intel announced that they were going to move the Haswell Core i3s and the Atom Bay Trail processors into the Chromebooks. And Chromebooks have been huge in education now, where people might have thought they picked up iPads and things like that. And but the take-up on Chromebooks is it's not huge. They've got 10% of the market. But with the slowdown in Windows 8, I think the sales of PCs have gone down because of Windows 8. People don't like it. And they're selling Core i3 laptops right now for about $300 at the moment. So for us, not too bad. I'm just wondering what the kind of future is, because I think Intel are hedging their bets that obviously they're in with Intel, Intel with Apple, Windows and Mac. Do they see the writing on the wall, really, that the Windows sales are slowing down and that they are actually kind of thinking that the Chromebook is the way to go? Because I think a lot of people, when they're kind of saying this XP thing, move to XP, a lot of people then go to a Chromebook. And if you're just doing things on the web, it probably is the way to go. And if you're going to a higher processor and more storage, and they're talking about offline capacity for video and things like that, is there actually a future for it now? Because the early days of Chromebook was, if you're not in touch with the cloud, it's not a lot of use. But we're always in touch with the cloud now. Mm. So is it actually a viable option now?
Anyone got any thoughts? There's a bit of me that's worried here, Righty, I've got to say, because the one thing that makes me think about Intel throwing its weight behind Chromebook is not for the fact that it's important for its business and the Chromebook's important for the world to have. It's the fact they want to just railroad ARM out of the job, and then it's a niche market for them again. And then at that point, really, you've got to say, Intel have cornered everything that could possibly want x86 architecture, no?
Well, they've failed in the tablet market, haven't they? They've not really done anything well in phones and tablets, so Chromebook is probably the best thing for them, really.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, is that at that point, as far as the because if you look at all of the Apple stuff, that's all running Intel. If you look at all of the Chromebooks that you've got kicking around, not Chromebooks, if you look at all of the netbooks that you've got kicking around, or the small laptops, there's a huge proportion of those are running Intel, if not the majority.
Yeah.
And so the Chromebook was the only thing that held out any hope for ARM in the desktop / nettop environment, no?
Well, yeah, but do you think that Intel is seeing a diminishing market in Windows laptops? And they're thinking, what's the next thing? Because I think people are using Chromebooks and that kind of theory of using the Chromebook as your main computer doing anything in the browser. They're actually seeing that as, let's get in now, because that might be the emerging market, where the Windows laptop might be the diminishing market.
Well, my thought process is, yes, they've seen that opportunity and they've seen that demise, but in the process what they're going to do is end up almost monopolising a certain type of the market. It'd be interesting what the EU has to say about this.
But is it a viable operating system yet? I know we're 4 years in now.
Early doors, but yes, it could be a move for the future. Jeff, you're going to say something there, mate. Dive in.
Everyone that I've encountered in person that has or uses a Chromebook complains about it being a piece of crap.
They don't care what it's running.
Yeah, like I even know or have met teenagers that are saying stuff like, yeah, you know, my parents bought me this Chromebook so I could have my own computer. And then next time you see them, I ask them about their Chromebook, and they're like, that piece of crap? I gave it away to a friend.
Is there anyone that's... I mean, the chat room's chiming in with a few comments here about ARM's going nowhere as long as AMD's in line. Everyone's raved about the fact that the Chromebook was great at the start and for a cheap machine. Now it's not a cheap machine anymore because it's got the Retina display on it. If it's not performing
the Retina display is the Pixel, which was a concept machine. The machines that Acer and Dell are releasing are $300.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, or even less.
Yeah. and education are picking up very, very fast. So there is a viable option, because with web apps and HTML5, they are being picked up very quickly.
Yeah, I see.
I think the Chromebook concept is something that has a lot of potential. I think where it sits right now, it's something that's being bought into by education because it's cheap and not because it's necessarily the right tool for what they need to accomplish. And I've seen complaints about that too. That said, the idea of being able to get a reasonably powerful machine that does everything you need at a really low price, that is compelling.
It is. My only thought process is that they are seeing it as an emerging potential, and they're seeing it like the Google One phone was. You know, the Google One phone was a piece of crap. Everyone slagged it off. Stephen Fry had one on loan and said, no, what a piece of crap this is. There were some nice things about it, but essentially it was a piece of crap. And then all of a sudden it wasn't, because the Google, you know, Android started working, the hardware started to fall in line with it, things were working together pretty well, and I'm thinking Intel are looking at the Google Chromebook and thinking, yes, it's a piece of crap, we understand it's a piece of crap, but one of the things that we can provide is a better processor, maybe, that they believe will help improve that performance. But also then, they're in at the ground level on it, and it's going to be one of the few laptop, desktop operating system markets that are available for them to corner. And if they get in early, they'll knock arm out of the ballpark.
Yeah.
When it does work.
They've even knocked out an iMac competitor this week that's running Chrome OS as well. So they're obviously investing, you know, everything in this.
I don't know. I think for most businesses, a Chromebook's not an option. And I think businesses are really what drive the PC sales. I think as a consuming device, you know, tablets, phones, Chromebooks are fine. I would be very concerned about the security, that if the password were cracked, that everything my company that I'm working for on in the cloud would be disrupted or harmed in some way. So still a lot of clients, lawyers in particular, doctors, HIPAA laws, things like that, are going to deter them from going that route. And finding the software you need. The kids don't like the Chromebook because they can't load their games on it. You know, yeah, you can play Angry Birds, but they want to play Call of Duty or, you know, other PC-based games. And so to go that, I can see why the teenagers are going to say, I don't like this. Now, I do have a friend who runs his own business. He loves his Chromebook. He's and for full disclosure, he's German. And they tend to like complicated things. And he was showing it to me and demonstrating how he can take care of his clients remotely and do what he needs to do. But it wasn't his only laptop. He only used that for specific purpose. So it's really, in my opinion, at this time, it's a niche product. Until we can get QuickBooks on it, or, you know, it's true that things like Adobe are going to all cloud-based Office 365, things like that, where you're renting the software. That fits really well in line with the Chromebook. But I still think security-wise, it's got an issue, potential issue there.
Yeah.
And just getting it adopted in the business environment to resolve. Everybody wants something cheap, but more importantly, they need to be able to get their work done. So it depends who we're talking about. If we're talking about a consumer or we're talking about a creator.
So are we saying the cloud is not ready yet?
It depends. I would say that depends on what line of work you're in. So let's say you're a photographer.
Yeah.
You could have raw images that are far too large to be uploading to the cloud. So it doesn't work out very well in your line of work. If you're a doctor or a lawyer, the security isn't going to be good enough. If you're a creator, you're limited in what software you can put on that Chromebook to create. You know, even if you're just an author, you know, that Chromebook can work for that. You could use Google Write and everything saved online. That's all well and good. But apart from that, like, I couldn't imagine editing a video on a Chromebook, you know, one of my YouTube videos. That would be insane, especially like a 4K video with, you know, 100 edits in it.
Oh, 1080 would be, it'd fall to pieces.
So what has matured? Has Chrome OS not matured, or has the cloud not matured? That's the question.
I think it's all mature. It's all evolving. Mm. And I would love, as a tech, I would love to see people get unchained from their PC, where they could go sit at any internet-connected computer anywhere in the world and get back to business, if you will.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about a business, that's different. So I think there's two worlds here. On the consumer side, is it ready? Depends on the consumer. The consumer's a gamer, not so much. And for the ones who can use the Chromebooks, they could probably use their smartphone for most of everything they can do with the Chromebook.
What's the influence of things like Sarbanes-Oxley as well? Because, I mean, they're very, very niche about who your communications come from, where they go to, the control of outward email outlets into your corporate systems and so on for traceability and auditing. After the Enron thing, that's still a big issue and still big influence on US business for certain.
It's huge.
Yeah. So has the Chromebook fit in with that? None at all, I would have thought.
Well, they're doing some integration with Microsoft and things like that, aren't they? There's some talk of that, but yeah. Yeah, if the cloud's not mature enough, then obviously the operating system won't follow as fast. But I think a lot of people do all of their kind of life in, I think it's more kind of following on from the thing where people are leaving XP and people are saying, well, if you're just on XP, you're just doing web stuff anyway, and you're going to move to a Chromebook. It did seem like a logical kind of a move. But obviously adding more power to it, obviously I'm kind of debunking my own kind of theory here that maybe it's not the right kind of thing, but it was just an interesting thing to see what people thought about where we are kind of 3 or 4 years after the Chrome OS was released, if it's still mature yet, or if the cloud was there.
Has the cloud failed to deliver? There's the big question. Has the cloud failed to deliver?
I don't think it's on the cloud. I mean, how do you print from a Chromebook? If you gave a Chromebook and you go, look, this is perfect for grandma because she doesn't have to worry about getting a virus, right? Because she's just going to get on the web with it, and it's right? It's the same argument people used with Linux. Put Linux on grandma's machine, but then she can't put the software on it that she needs.
But I mean, a lot of people don't print anymore. And also, you can print from a Chromebook to a direct connection. But if you're in the cloud, you've got Google. Haven't you got Chrome to print or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah. And you can print from an iPad nowadays as well. So that's already there. So,
But that's not exactly the easiest thing to set up for your average computer user to set up, like air printing or web printing. And people want to print out their plane tickets and they want to print out items. I know I get the phone calls from people when their printers don't work. And the printers that you can plug in directly are very limited. At least that's my understanding. You can't just
go and
buy
a cheapest printer. Is it really want to, though, or is it have to? Because if I fly certain airlines, I can't use my mobile phone as my ticket. I have to print that out. Some places won't take a coupon off my phone. I have to print that out. I find that I don't want to print stuff basically ever anymore. I have to print this for tax documents. I have to print this for the airport. I have to print this because the place down the road can't scan my phone. Like, those are the kind of things I find that I'm doing, which isn't to say that people aren't doing it, but I don't think it's a want to. I think it's a have to. And it's like a hurdle to overcome.
Chat room's reinforcing that. I've got a friend with an iPad, emailed to local stationery print so that they can print it. Jew Fred Jim says, I've got to print some of my tickets. There's no option. Despite the fact he says he's warming to the cloud, even though he was initially a skeptic. But there's a good point there. I think we're still hooked on the physical, most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Most definitely.
So I don't know that that's a blame on the cloud.
I think no, but it's a whole thing though, isn't it, Carrie? It's something. The one thing that struck me a lot in the last 2 years is kind of the scale of the world and the way that you meet and create challenges. It's Twitter that's helped me do that. You know, you look at the Mac Show. Our Mac Show will go to anywhere between 26,000 and 40,000 people a week, and I've got 1,400 followers on Twitter, so it's, you know, that there's a correspondence, if you like, between the two figures. And you look at someone who's on TV running a crap show like Piers Morgan, he's got 3.5 million followers. And you get even further, you get up to the Miley Cyruses and the Justin Biebers and those kind of things, and you're talking 50 million followers on Twitter. And you're kind of like, the economy of the scale of the operation is vast, and you can't begin to perceive how small some things are compared to how big things are. You look at camera sales. Camera sales are minuscule in comparison to iPhone sales or even some of the worst cell phones that are out there. Camera sales are absolutely infinitesimal for them. So, you know, the amount of money you generate from something and the amount of possibilities that something presents is based on the uptake of the mass population. And I don't think the mass population is going to go for the Chromebook. And I think there's a perfect storm against that, if you like, of the fact that people don't trust the cloud, people can't get the cloud, people don't like the fact that the Chromebook's doing something that's completely alien to them, or it hasn't got a disk drive. I mean, bloody Greeny last week on the Mac show, I don't like the new Retina MacBook Pro, it hasn't got a disk drive in it. Yes. Are you on, boy? I haven't used a disk drive in years. But that's not everybody, and I think you end up with that perfect storm of, if something's going to hit the mass market, it's got to answer all of those questions, and it's got to get rid of all of those challenges. So then the mass market will flood to it, and I can't see anyone flooding to a Chromebook, certainly not in the near future.
Well, but the cloud's ready, because I live in it every single day.
You're in a facility. I'm not in a facility.
There's
mate.
Ready for you, and there's ready for muggles.
Hmm.
And
there's ready for me. I'm no muggle, Kelly, but I have to run around with a MiFi, and sometimes I'm shooting a train in a field, or I'm shooting some cables being shoved under a farmer's fence, and there is no connection. I can't get a connection on my phone, let alone fire up a MiFi and go to the cloud and do something.
Right, and there's still a lot of parts of the U.S. and other parts of the world even where mobile reception is crap. And so I can't pull out my phone and do what I'm trying to do. But I also think that there's a lot of, whether it's justified or not, there's a fair amount of resistance from people who don't, you know, I mean, there's a reason there's still print magazines and not everybody is subscribed to Newsstand on their iPad, right? And there's still a reason that in whatever format it may be, there's a printed newspaper every day that people buy. And there's still all of these things that, yeah, there is a digital equivalent, an online equivalent, but that's not where some people are at yet. Mm. And it can be lack of education. It can be preference. Some people would rather have the piece of paper than have to read something on a screen. It can be a physical limitation. It's hard. You know, I can't read a screen. I can only read it if it's printed on a piece of paper. Those people want to print. There aren't many of them probably, but those people probably do. There's a gap there between people who are comfortable with, I put all my important stuff in Dropbox, or I put it all in my cloud and I have a backup that is backing up to some remote location on the internet somewhere. And some people are totally comfortable with that. Not everybody is. And some of it's security. I think some of it though is logistical, like that farmer probably doesn't have a reliable internet connection, let alone a reliable broadband internet connection. So if that's the case, then of course he's gonna not be super hot on something that he has to download every day.
So here's a map, okay? I've typed in is broadband coverage UK. So this is fixed landline coverage for the UK. If you are in a green area, you are ranked number one. That means you've got probably a connection speed above 80 megabits a second. If you're in the five area, you've got a connection speed which is not guaranteed above 2 megabits a second. So most of South Wales, almost zero connectivity. Outer Hebrides and those kind of places and the Isles, almost zero connectivity. Most of Scotland, Cumbria and the north of England beyond Blackpool, barely any connectivity, and Batwinch has to decide whether she wants to watch the live feed or post something in the chat room because she lives in one of the purple areas. You're into an average connection speed of Aberdeen, Newcastle, and Hull. I mean, Hull is not an easy place to get to full stop by car, let alone with a broadband signal. And then the other areas are probably at 20 megabits a second or greater. I mean, I live in a conurbation. I'm getting 120 megabits a second because I've got fiber to the box and then copper to the door, which allows me to do that. But you go 3 miles down the street and you're in a little village called Water Orton. And Water Orton, the best you'll get in Water Orton of actual speed is 1 megabit per second potentially because it's so far away from the nearest exchange. And BT will not build a new exchange for Water Orton to do services with them because it's not viable. There's only 2,000 people live in the village, and I agree with them. So where's the money coming from to give these people a super fast connection that then gives them the ability to go into the cloud and cloud storage to come into it? You look at cloud security. I had an account with who's the cloud people that do the backups that used to sponsor the Twit network? Can't remember the name.
Oh, was that Dolly Drive?
No.
Backblaze or Carbonite or...
Carbonite, there we go. And I had an account with Carbonite based on the fact that I listened to Twit and I bought the account and Twit got the money. And I had it for a year and it never put a complete backup in the cloud because I was never in a fast enough connection to get up the 1 terabyte drive that I had in the laptop. There, right there, that picture is the reason that anything that's cloud-based is always going to fail in the UK, and that's landlines, let alone when you start going out on your phone. God forbid what that looks like.
Well, I think that's my point, is what's the difference between a Chromebook and an Android-based tablet? Where's the incentive to pick one over the other? It seemed to me the tablet would be more convenient and do exactly the same thing. And if you wanted to add a keyboard, throw a Bluetooth keyboard on it and be done with it at even less money than what the Chromebook sells for, unless I'm missing something.
I don't know. Maybe you are. I'm trying to find a national broadband map for the US. And I can only do it by zip code. I can only do it by zip code.
Per provider.
Yeah. Because the FCC doesn't want to give that information out and show how crap it is. Or how much it is.
We all know it's crap.
Yeah. And expensive.
Yeah.
We're like 30th.
Good
or
story, right? That was a good debate, mate.
Yeah, try to live in the future, eh?
Well, no, I do agree with you. I would love it to be a superb service, connected everywhere all the time. And I love having my iPad Air with me stick in it and connected, and that's that. And I went into the 3 network, and I wanted to buy the 4G dongle so I could take advantage of it and get two new SIMs that would work with the MiFi. And the guy said, well, you know you've got a data connection for your iPad. Yeah, he said, well, you don't need that if you've got this MiFi. So why don't you swap it out? Because I don't always have the battery power. I don't always have the ability to connect it up. It's not necessarily in the right bag, whereas the iPad goes with me in every bag that I've got. So I only just want a connection. I don't want anything else other than just check my email, make sure everything's okay, stay on Twitter, maybe do a bit of browsing, and then I'm gone, which is the days that I've got just my iPad with me as opposed to a laptop. And if I've got my laptop, then I've got my MiFi. And I just came in here for two new SIMs and the MiFi. See, I'll tell you what we could do. We could save you £2 a month on this one if you changed over and you did that and that. Dude, I'll give you £24, which is the £2 a month for the next 12 years, not to ask me again if I want to save £2 on my bill. How's that? That's how much I want to get out the frigging shop. Well, I could get another two, but I'll give you £48 if you shut up and you don't ask me about getting another £2 off my bill. Just give me the frigging MiFi, give me the SIM cards. I have a train to catch. Thank you very much. It's a nightmare out there. Jeff, did you bring a story?
I did. I have two smaller stories that are almost like cool stuff found things, but I thought were really interesting. And the first one is for a 3D printer, but instead of a printer, it's actually a pen. And it's this. I just dropped it into our live chat, and it's called the Lix, L-I-X. And what it does is it lets you draw like you would with any pen or pencil, but it has this material that comes out the tip, and it actually creates solid lines. So you can create three-dimensional, you can draw three-dimensional objects with the pen. And with all of the excitement that I've been seeing over the past year about 3D printers, seeing something that suddenly becomes hand size and you can make whatever you can imagine and then draw.
This looks stupendous. I find that
to be very fascinating.
It's amazing. And it's British.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
Oh, God, I love being British.
So yeah, it leaks.
They had a 30,000-pound goal, and last I looked, they were up over 613,000 pounds.
Yeah, I love these stories where they put down, oh, we just want $2,000, and they've got £4 million. Just brilliant. Well done, Licks. Superb. British people with British things that I've still got to see it to believe it, I've got to say. It does sound a bit King's New Clothes to me.
There's a company that made something like this a couple years ago that didn't work very well. So what I'm hoping is that this company has learned from the failures of the other company and has something that when it actually ships will live up to its claims.
I'm just playing the video here. Anton Surin, maybe he's not British after all.
Enhanced dimensional features of Licks help them to come up with something unique and interesting.
Licks has a great potential and can be a perfect tool for stylists, architects, designers, and anybody who are interested in 3D printing.
In short, Licks has everything an experimenter needs. The small device will allow you to go beyond your imagination.
We're nearly a minute into the video. They haven't shown anything yet.
It's for you. If you love to experiment different things, it will open new possibilities.
No, they haven't.
That bothers me. Oh, we're back to him. And not one of them's English yet. So it's not British.
3D printing pen will help you add a spark to your work.
Now there's a picture of the pen. So we've had lots of people talking. Now we've got a picture of the pen, and it's rolling, which pens do pretty well.
The smallest and smartest 3D printing pen in the world.
Is that Jeff doing the voiceover?
It's highly portable, with its small size and power cable.
You've got to plug it in.
Traditional USB ports.
Okay, to the USB port.
Licks is a pen.
And you've got to put in your plastic, obviously, I suppose. So that's fair enough. Oh, now it's drawing. Hang on. Oh, my God! The dude's drawing a line straight up off the page.
Just right? Handle the small and smart pen once and notice that it fits perfectly
but that's
in
it.
Your hand, giving you extreme comfort and balance while you draw.
If you've got any artistic ability here, this thing may actually be something that's really cool. But all
technological core.
Now he's drawing a square. He's drawing a three-dimensional thingy.
Yep.
Oh my life!
Decoration pieces.
There's a nude woman leaning backwards, and it's perfect.
Fashion prototypes and different forms of drawings.
Oh my God!
How awesome is this?
You can make anything out of it within just a few seconds.
Yeah, right.
Essentially, Licks 3D printing pen has the similar function as of 3D printers.
And you stick it together,
it melts and cools colored plastic, letting you create rigid and freestanding sculptures.
Crap.
Which can be formed in any imaginable shape.
Oh, and he's picked it up on the table! Oh! Oh, I've seen enough.
See, this is cool.
But if it's more than £25, I'm not buying one.
How much is it?
How much is it? Have we got a retail value on these?
I have no idea. All I know is that it's just fracking cool.
I'm sorry I took the piss to start with, because it is just the most incredible thing I've seen for a long time.
I would love that.
That's 3D amazing. Printing that you draw. Yeah.
Yeah.
For £73, you get a Licks pen plus £10 shipping to outside the UK and two bags of mixed colour plastics. So that's £70. That's brilliant.
I love that.
I've never put money into a Kickstarter, and I can't draw to save my life, but I want to put it into that.
I want to draw rude things and leave them around work.
Yeah, but according to Jufro Jim, you do that already, Paul.
Oh, he's started, has he?
Yeah, that room has already been and gone, mate. Yeah. Jeff, kudos, mate. That is story of the year for me so far.
Love that.
Super.
I had a feeling you'd like it. And I had a backup story for just in case, but I don't really need it.
No, we don't need it. That's absolutely friggin' awesome. I love that.
But I might contribute to that.
I'm going to buy one. Stuff that. I can't draw, but I'm going to buy one. I'm going to buy one. I tell you who's going to buy one is Paul Kirkle.
That's exactly who's going to buy one. Yeah.
He's going to buy three in different flavors, and he's going to want a brush for one.
Oh. Yes, and I have a feeling you're totally right. And then he'll complain when he realizes he left one on the bus.
And the thing is as well, they've only 1,000 backers. For the 73 thing, the pledge of 100 backers for £43 or more, which gets you a Leaks pen and a matte or grey matte, is also gone. So actually, there's none of these that will get you a pen. You'll have to wait till it goes on sale.
It's amazing.
Bugger.
I don't get it. I really don't get it.
Oh,
it's like me saying, look, I got my new HP printer right here. The pen is 30 cents, and then the ink refills are about $12.
Yeah, but, can you draw a line?
You can write out whatever you want to write out on whatever kind of paper you want to use. No drivers are necessary. This is great. The new printer from HP, inkjet, right here.
Thank you, Carrie Amish Holtzman. But
I'm just saying, I mean, okay, so it's 3D. It's flimsy, it's cheap. It's like it reminds me of a glue gun. I could do that with a glue gun.
Do you own a glue gun?
Yes, I do.
Right, go get it and come back and draw something for us while Kelly's doing her story.
Well, you're assuming I can draw.
It doesn't
give me any artistic talent.
I will take a straight line up off the table, dude.
No.
Oh, I could do that and just leave it on. Just plug it in and leave it on.
I do that by itself. It drips all the time when I leave it lying on the side. Yeah. Okay.
A naked woman in the next half hour.
No, with the pen. With the pen. Drawn with the pen.
If I could do that, I wouldn't be here right now.
I'll take anything.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Holtzman, for providing some bar humbug to this week's
show. Well,
it wouldn't be Carrie Holtzman without some bar humbug. Exactly. Kelly, what did you bring for us, mate? Anything at all? Because you were last minute.
Okay, well, I've got a couple of things. One of them is basically only American. I wrote a piece for the Mac Observer, and it's about net neutrality. And it's specifically American because the U.S. is where a lot of this fight is going down. But what I did was went and I spent a significant amount of yesterday reading everything I could about net neutrality, what it means, what the current proposals look like right now. What the sort of things are that you can do if you are a person who lives in the United States and wants to make your voice heard on this issue, whether you're for preserving net neutrality or you think it's awesome that companies would get to decide what you get access to. And I spent a ton of time. And so I put together this article explaining what it is, why it's important, and what you can do to make sure that it remains alive. So hopefully, and I'm bringing it up because it's important, and I really hope that people can take some time to read through it. I did try to break things down to a point where if you don't know anything about net neutrality, you can read this and understand what it is and figure out what we're talking about. Would you hear different phrases on the news, what it is that people are actually talking about, and have a better understanding of what it is and what the proposals mean. So I'm bringing that in, and it's a bit of self-promotion, but I worked really hard on it to make sure that it was something that people could use to understand better themselves and then explain to other people. And so because I happened to write it, but it is an article full of knowledge that I feel like is important to the world. So I want to share that.
So,
it's a really good piece.
Well done,
Kelly.
I'm
in a position to be able to say so.
That's the editor of Mac Observer. I wholeheartedly agree with myself on that one. Couldn't agree more.
That's right. I am unanimous in that.
I mean, the thing is with the neutral net is that a lot of people seem to think that it's about freedom of information, and it's not. The neutrality of the net is about all bytes, bits being equal.
Surely. Right. It doesn't matter what they are. It has nothing to do with what the information is. It has to do with, can I send Jeff an email if I have Comcast as my cable provider and Jeff has Time Warner as his cable provider? It may be the way this would work is that if I were also a Time Warner cable customer, then Jeff would get my email immediately. And if I'm a Comcast customer, then Jeff, who is a Time Warner customer, won't get that email until tomorrow. Because my information is lower priority because I'm not a subscriber to the same service as him. Or if people want Netflix, then if I want, you know, right now I have a $50 a month. I know it's not. I know it's more. I have a $50 a month broadband plan. But if I want Netflix, I am now paying $8 to Netflix. And I'm paying for a $55 a month data plan from my internet provider because I want to have Netflix as part of what I'm streaming, part of what my internet traffic is going to be. And that's crap. And it shouldn't matter what it doesn't matter whether or not what I'm looking at is cat videos or the Anarchist Cookbook. The point is, it shouldn't matter what it is or where it comes from or where it's hosted. And it's that keeping those connections free, it's been very Wild West for a lot of years. And it should continue to basically not matter what that traffic is. And it's complicated, I can tell you, because Jeff yesterday before I could even write it. I said, I got to take a break. My brain is full. I have no idea. Like, I need to process. And then I can go about explaining it to people. But it was really... It's a really important thing, and it's important to everybody. So even if you don't live in the United States, it's still an important thing to read because it's good to know what the discussion is about. And particularly because if you live in Canada, you're going to end up with something very similar to what the United States ends up with. It seems like whenever we do something, particularly when it's bad for people, Canada passes some similar sort of version. And if you're in the UK, you know, there's broadband there. There's the same sort of arguments that are going to start happening there with other sorts of streaming services. And I just really think that it's an important thing for people to be aware of, regardless of where you live.
I just see, this is where I think that we've got a singular difference, but then a unification as well, is that the net neutrality, as far as, you know, people, you're talking about it being, an equality, but the thing is, the war on net neutrality isn't a war. It's the OK Corral. It's Wyatt Earp and what's his face? Clamp? I want to say Clampett, but it wasn't the Clampetts. It was Clantons, whatever it was. Who was it? It was. I started off with a really good thing there. Yeah, no, I forget it. No, it's a two-sided affair. That's the problem that you've got, is that you've got no competition.
No, so, but it's actually good, because right now it means that regular people still stand a chance
at
making a difference and affecting change.
The Clampetts, the Clantons, that was it. Clantons.
That lot, yeah.
The Clantons. See, I knew I'd remember. No, it's not. It's a two-sided war. And when you've got a two-sided war, if someone starts to get ahead, then everyone just... There is no competition. There's no... Is it the Clintons, says the chat room? there's no competition, whereas at least here, we've got BT, but they're oversighted by Ofcom, who do actually make sure that they give out equal service to other people. And right. There is genuine competition here. And there is no genuine competition in the US. So that's where we separate, because we've got competition, you haven't. The problem will come in the fact that your control over the net means that you will start to constrict and stifle the rest of the world. And that's where World War III is going to start.
And right now, it's still at a point in the United States where if people get involved, then something could happen and it could swing our way. And that's really the thing that is important right now, is that there's still a chance. This isn't like... the 15 years or so before they broke up phone companies, where there really was no chance, no matter how many letters you write to your congressman or whatever, are you ever going to get any of this? You know, so there is a chance right now that this is still something that if a person calls a congressman in the U.S., that it could go our way for a change. And I think that it's an important thing to have happen. So, but definitely that's what the article is for, is trying to explain, like, these are the things people are talking about when people are rattling on about neutrality and the last mile and all these things. These are the issues that they're coming up against. And
but there
so,
should also
that's
be,
why it's good to know.
There should also be an inequality of bites based on the speed that you expect and the amount that you pay for that speed. So the all bites are not equal in that sense.
Right. And there's no motivation for anyone to increase their network. You know, like when lots of people were buying 3G phones, then AT&T went, you know, it would really be great if we had a 3G network that supported all these phones and we could charge people for a 3G data plan. And like cable customers, there's no motivation there. So they have no incentive to improve their network because they're already making billions of dollars. And what they're doing is going to the government and going, gosh, we just can't seem to find it in our budgets to make the network better. And so there are a number of, I mean, there's a whole other complicated issue about making internet providers behave under the same rules that utilities do, like water and electricity. And the real problem down the road, forward thinking, looking ahead, is that what you end up with is underserved portions of the United States where people are poor, where it's a rural part of Oregon. Like that's the first thing I think of, is where I grew up. Like there's no way there's any interest in having broadband there unless the issue is forced. And how are 1,000 people worth of population going to be worth forcing the issue for unless it's just because it's a good thing to do, just like a freeway or electricity or water service or any of these like basic utilities that we use in the United States? Those are the things that are going to be important. And, you know, and the internet is going to be one of those things. And so poor communities, rural communities, any place that's underserved, like giving people any sort of opportunity, the same opportunity everywhere, is important. And I think that that's something that is fragile right now and probably going to go away if this doesn't swing for consumers.
The internet is not a utility. I don't believe that argument in the slightest. It's still a luxury. It's not an essential to life. Not in chance. My mum and dad are still alive and they don't use the internet. How amazing is that?
But your mum and dad are not going through school or trying to apply to colleges or trying to get their first job. And those kids who have no concept of how email works are going to have a disadvantage when they sit down at a desk that has a computer and go.
Now you're talking about equality. You're not talking about a utility. There's a difference.
Well, to be fair, you don't need electricity to live or a phone.
Right.
No.
Right. And they're still utilities.
No, but they are utilities which are ingrained in our culture to a far greater degree than the internet currently is. And I will not disagree that the internet could be classed as a high-level utility at some point, but it is not detrimental to your development as an individual and your quality of life. It is a luxury.
It would set you back, though.
No,
if you don't have electricity and you walk into an office, you're going to freak out the first time the lights come on. It puts you at a disadvantage when you go to get
a
job.
That's a really thin example.
That's why, but not every job is going to be in an office. Some jobs.
Yeah, chime in, Amish boy. Charming. Come on.
I was just saying.
Okay, that's true.
People have to dig ditches too, and people have to join the services who are often financially not in a good place, and that's where they get their education. And not every job is an office job.
Yeah.
And right now, what I'm talking about is not that it is essential, but that it be treated the same. And so, anyone who wants to have electricity can get electricity. You know, it doesn't matter what part of Portland I live in. It doesn't matter how big a house I have. None of those things matter. I have the opportunity. You know, I have the opportunity, all the infrastructure has been built. And if I want electricity, I call up the power company and I have electricity. And the same with water, and the same with the garbage service, and it should be the same with the internet. Infrastructure is important. It should be built. It shouldn't matter. It should just be done because it's the right thing to do. And then worry about whether or not people are signing up.
Yeah, no, hang on a minute. Hang
it
on.
Should be other people's opportunity. I'm not saying everybody should get all the internet they want at gigabits per second for $6 a month. That's not what I'm trying to put across.
No.
But it's definitely something where it should be equal opportunity for everybody. And right now, that is totally not the case.
Yeah, but hang on a second. If you cut your water off, people die. You cut your heating off, people die. You cut your electricity off, people die. You cut your gas off, people die. You cut the internet off, no one dies. It is a luxury. And there are people in the chat room who are saying that okay, things like you can't go on, a lot of bills you have to pay online now. There are no essential services that are regulated properly in the world which say you can only pay for my stuff online. You have multiple facets of payment through the post office, through telephone, through other utility services which are there. You cut the phone service off, people die because you can't call emergency services anymore. It is not the case with the internet. The internet is still a luxury. At some point in the future, it will transition perhaps into a utility. But the net neutrality argument falls flat on its face every single time when people start talking about the fact that the internet is a utility. It absolutely is not. No one dies because they haven't got a broadband connection.
I said it should be treated by the same rules.
No, it should not, because no one's going to die if you don't have an internet connection. It is entirely separate, and it diminishes the importance of the other utilities to call it that.
You know, it's funny that we mentioned the show Survivor was mentioned earlier.
Uh-huh.
About the latest Survivor's on. And Survivor's all about radical self-reliance without any of these services, without electricity. These people without survive utilities. Just fine. I've gone to Burning Man, which is in the middle of the desert, and I've done this twice, which is, again, about radical self-reliance, and people are bringing out generators. They're not calling up somebody and having them run an electrical line, and even if that's an option, which it isn't for everybody, some people have to have big gas tanks and have a truck deliver propane or liquid natural gas. There's rural areas where, yes, you could get power if you want to pay for it. If you're going to pay the $10,000 to run the line, and there are internet services that'll be more than happy to run the line for $10,000, whatever the fee is. The problem we run into is the technology evolves so quickly. I mean, the copper lines that we ran for phone systems are still in use today that were run under the massive endeavor to run them to connect the continents, under the ocean and whatnot. And those lines are still being used today. The internet, we've gone from DSL using those same copper wires to category 3, category 5, category 6 cables and token ring connectors. And now we're in fiber optic. So let's say you lay out all this money for this fiber optic and then some other new technology comes out. Now you've got to pull all that out and run it all over again. I mean, I've already heard the limitations from my local cable provider about what the cost would be to pull out all the cable to replace it with fiber optic. And that's why we don't have fiber here, because they're still paying, apparently, for ripping up the streets to put the cable in, which was supposed to last forever. So I think the technology evolves too quickly. Everything's got to go wirelessly. I think that's where the answer is going to be, and that's where your infrastructure is going to happen. Intel promised WiMAX for a long, long time, and that was supposed to solve. Remember WiMAX?
Yeah.
I think that when that happens... What's that? Good times. I think when they can start broadcasting it in greater ranges, more like, just like a cell phone, they're already doing it with air cards and such. I think that's where your infrastructure is going to be. That's where I think it's going to happen. I think this whole running cable stuff is old school. It's expensive and it's too limited in how long it's going to last. That's why I don't think it's going to happen. Question, not that way.
A couple of points from Jim in the chat room, and I don't wish to offend you here, Jim, but he says hospitals use the internet, emergency services use the internet. Yes, and if they're wholly reliable on the internet for the provision of those emergency services in that hospital facility, it's run by dipshits. My father went into hospital with a heart attack a couple of years ago, and I went to see him the following day, and he was doolally. He called my mother by his brother's dead wife's name. He was that far out of it as far as the drugs they were giving him went. I did some digging and investigation. I looked at his physical chart and said he hasn't been given a couple of the drugs. And then they looked out and realised that because he'd come in after 2 a.m., the computer system updates at 2 a.m., so because his entries for drugs were listed after 2 a.m., he wasn't on that day's run of drugs from the pharmacy. So they were going to wait 36 hours to give him his next lot of drugs, which is why he'd gone doolally, because they were relying on the computer. That is where it falls down, is when you're relying on the system. And he's put down here, you, and here's a question: could the world survive if the internet went down tomorrow? Do you know what? They raked up a few cables last year in different parts of the world. Nobody died. Nobody died from the cables being broken under the sea from the trawlers or whatever it was that picked them up. Nobody dies without internet, mate. It is not a utility. People do not die when it misses. Telephones, you kill people. Electricity, gas, heating, water, you kill people if they haven't got that. Not the internet. Anyone else want the final word? Because I'll let them have it.
Don't hold back, Ewan. How do you really feel?
That's how I feel. There you go. You got my honest opinion.
Well, again,
I think the thing is, no, but my point was at the start of that, is that when people go, oh, the internet's a utility, you've got to protect it, they're losing the argument straight away because they're trying to put it at a level of importance which people that have got some sanity will look at other stuff and go, hang on a minute. You know, they are not that far up the pole. Yes, it's important. Yes, it's really good. It's a luxury which is becoming an essential luxury, if you like, but it's not a utility. And I think you should just say, look, if you're going to give it to people, you've got to make sure that companies don't choke the shit out of the pricing and the speed, which is what net neutrality is about in the States. It's not about whether it's a utility and it's essential for the people. It's about the fact that companies are clamoring to try and control it and make
massive profits from it. And one of the ways to keep that from happening is to have it classified as a utility. Like I said, I don't believe the internet is necessary for life, but I do believe that the same sort of rules should apply to it so that exactly that is a thing that cannot happen.
But then you're trying to take a set of rules and apply them to something to which it doesn't fit to achieve a different end. And that's the wrong way as well as.
Do you remember Enron? Because Enron was a power company and Enron gave electricity to people. And Enron failed in a spectacular fashion. I'm not saying
Enron was a completely different situation.
How is it different? Electricity is a utility, Ewan. You just said so.
No, but they were...
You want to do this? Let's do this.
They were lying.
Come on.
Hang on a minute. Enron has got absolutely no comparison to net neutrality with the FCC because Enron was about a company that was corrupt, that was lying
Enron
about
it. Enron was a utility.
No, it's
Enron,
got nothing
Enron
to that.
Enron was a buyer and seller of electricity.
That utility companies are subject
Kelly,
to.
Kelly, let me finish.
Enron at one point...
Kelly, let me finish my point.
...ridiculous amount of money.
Do not cut me off again. Let me finish my point and then you can come back. Enron is not a comparison because although it was a utility, it was a corrupt company which was lying about its statistics to provide satisfaction to shareholders, and it dug a pit that it couldn't board over anymore. It's got f*** all to do with it being a utility. Any other company in the US could have done that. And the problem that you've got in your country at the moment is the fact that business is running your government and business is also then starting to clamour and pull in what it thinks it is at the detriment of the population. You don't have a democracy anymore. That is your issue. And it's got nothing to do with utilities, not utilities, or the freedom of the internet. Your turn.
My point is... One of the first arguments that people give when you start saying common carrier, which is what the utility rules sort of are, is when you classify something as a common carrier, the first thing a lot of people say is, oh, you're trying to keep them from making money, but that's totally not the case. And it's totally legitimate that a utility company can make money. The electric company that I pay money to each month is making a profit. And there are co-ops, like where I used to live in Eastern Oregon, it was a co-op was how all of the electric happened. And it lives under slightly different rules, but it's still the electric company. And so it's still, if you want to have power in your house, this is who you pay for it. And it wasn't monopolized. And it like, there was no tragedy of that. And like, I know people who live in places where there is not electricity. It's a place and it's in Eastern Oregon. So whenever anybody's talking about, oh, we should totally do this, and oh, my 4G is so slow. Like, those are the people that I'm thinking of, because there are a lot of places where regular access to that sort of thing is not normal. And
so they're not reliant on it.
About making the internet beholden to the same rules as any other utility is basically that everybody gets a crack at it. And there's a certain amount of expected that needs to happen before anything, before profit or anything. It's, you do it because it's what you do. And I'm not trying to keep people from making money. That was never my intention. I grew up in the 80s. I am fundamentally hardwired to profit. So, like, I get that. But that doesn't mean that it's not the right thing to do to provide some sort of broadband access to, you know, in places where it might be underserved. Because there's no incentive for that to happen, and there should be.
No.
And the only way to force the issue is with a common carrier sort of set of rules.
Here's a couple things I don't understand. One, who's making these people live there? Is the United States changed and no one's told me that you, wherever you are, people have to come to you now? Why can't you just move if it's that important?
Hang on, Carrie. The point to come back against Kelly there with that one is the fact that those people choose to live there. They are set up for the absence of electricity. Therefore, they are prepared to survive it. If you take some old lady who's living in a suburb of Birmingham tonight and you cut off her internet, there's nothing going to happen to her. If you're in the dead of winter and you cut off her internet, nothing's going to happen to her. You cut off her phone, she can't ring for emergency services. You cut off her electricity and gas, she can't see, she can't heat herself. She will die. You will not ever get to a situation where cutting off someone's internet will make them die. And the utilities are essential services for people that rely on them, who have come to rely on them to that degree. That they will die if they are removed. The internet is nothing like that. Not even close to being that kind of essential.
Heat's out, I wear a sweater.
Oh, Kelly.
I can live in Arizona, without in electricity. Arizona, it in, is in Arizona, a possibility. It is a thing that can happen. And if you're going to treat it like that, yes, I can live without that. I can live without a sink that has water in it. If I have to go to the street and get a bucket of water from the community pump the way it used to be, that's a thing that used to happen.
Right. No.
It really works.
You can't
tell
me.
Having the sink in my house dispense water is a convenience. Having a light that turns on over my head is a convenience. I could have the window open right now instead, but I don't. I have the light on.
No, mate, I disagree entirely with that. I have to say that you are right off the reservation.
Here's the thing, you keep bringing this up, but I keep agreeing with you that nobody dies without internet access. That's not what I'm saying. You're violently agreeing with me. I never said people need the internet or they will die. I said that it was an advantage. And what's happening is you're creating another kind of gap, particularly in America, between, like, right now we have an income gap between people who make all the money and then everybody else fighting over the last bit. And then you have another kind of gap that is becoming more evident that should stop, which is people who live in places served by the internet and people who live in places where it's crap. And so they're not able to spend the time and get the information out of it that other people would have the opportunity to do. I have a reasonably fast connection, so I'm able to do many things in a very reasonable amount of time. Somebody who only has dial-up or doesn't have anything is not getting the same sort of opportunity. My hour on the internet could be spent dramatically differently if I had to wait for everything to load over a 28-8
connection. Mate, you're the one that started the discussion about utility, and anything that you've just said does not convince me that the internet is a utility. Nothing that you have said for the last 10 minutes even gets remotely close to suggesting that it's utility status. It is not. You're talking about advantage and disadvantage over others, and others and who haves and who's haves not, but that's not what makes a thing a utility.
Okay, now here's one thing that hasn't been hit on in all this yet, which is that the way the rules governing the FCC are set up, they probably won't be able to effectively manage a net neutrality set of rules unless they choose to classify internet service providers as a utility, which has nothing to do with whether or not they should be. It's just the way it is in the United States with our screwed up rules and regulations. That may be the only way that they can make something effectively happen.
Yeah, I don't really think this is I think you hit on it a little earlier by saying businesses are running the government. Netflix wants to be able to serve you your episode of Friends, regardless of who your carrier is. And if your experience with Netflix is less than optimal, so you cancel your Netflix account because the picture's breaking up and spotty, Netflix has a business to ensure that they can deliver their content to you with the best possible quality and charge you the most amount of money for that. And they need the cooperation of the internet service providers who are then saying you're overburdening, you're overtaxing our networks with your entertainment, your non-essential that you're profiting from, that's costing us money. And so I think this is really all a corporate issue that's been brought up, where you've got the providers who have their expenses, the internet providers, then you've got the internet service, or we'll call it the Netflixes of the world, and that want to charge for a service. I mean, what good is having a cloud upload service if you've got a terabyte, as you mentioned earlier, Ewan, and you can't get it all up there? You're adding more data than you can possibly upload. That's for them to resolve. That's not for us to resolve. And that's why they're fighting about it. I don't think it's a general folks going, hey, I don't have internet. I think a lot of people who live where they don't have internet, that's why they move there. When I go to Burning Man, I go there to get away from all that. That's the whole point of it. And whatever happened to self-reliance? And when have we become a society that suddenly my entertainment is a right to be entertained? Because ultimately, yes, the internet can be used to make money. You can start your own business. But when is that a right as an American citizen to have internet service? You know, it's what happened to self-reliance? What happened to people actually going and doing something to get something instead of, when did it become do this for me? I don't know when this happened in my life here in America. I don't know when it happened, but at some point people decided that when I was a grown up, there used to be bumper stickers people had that said America, love it or leave. And now it's like America, love it or change it to suit your needs. To me, nobody's stopping anybody from getting internet. They're not saying you can't have it because you're a certain race or a certain religion. If you live in a certain rural area where it's not, you can move if it's that important to you. I don't understand where this entitlement comes from that has become American society. And I can certainly understand why other countries despise us, that this is an issue. Really? You're complaining because you have to pay $5 more to watch Netflix? It's a ridiculous argument. And I realize it's just a sample, but there are jobs out there, as I've already mentioned, that have nothing to do with the internet. We have survived all of generations for thousands of years without it. We will continue to survive with or without it. And I agree.
In varying degrees of chaos.
I really like the episode of the IT Crowd when there's a fire and he opens up the email and he sends the email to the fire department. Help, fire, hope to see you soon. Best regards, Moss. And I just
thought, that's awesome.
You know, no one's going to use the internet to report a fire. It's just, that's not the way it works, at least not yet. And yes, here in Arizona, we get back to the electricity. We have people who die when it gets 120 degrees, it's generally the elderly. And every summer, and you'll see it on the news, and it's not just Arizona, places have extremely hot weather. So the argument of putting on a sweater when it's too cold, you know, doesn't apply.
It doesn't hold water because they should move. According to you, if they don't like where they are, they should move.
That's not what he's saying.
They should move. Stop living in Arizona. It's too friggin' hot.
That's not what he's saying, Kelly.
Well, no, I'm saying they're in some cases they're here because they have to be here because of doctor's orders. They have to get out of where they were. And as long as they've got air conditioning in the 120 degree summer, they're fine. But if the power gets cut and they don't have air conditioning for 3 days, people die. And it's not that they were unhappy.
That, but they should move. That's not what he's saying. All those people who live where there are hurricanes.
If they move somewhere that didn't have power, then what you said makes sense. but they're moving somewhere where there is power. And then when that suddenly is lost, they can't survive without it. They actually die. They literally die. They didn't go there without power and then die. Then what you say would make complete sense. Why would you go live in a teepee in the middle of the desert if it's important for you to, you know, if you're going to be, if you could potentially die from heat stroke? So what we're talking about is having something and then having it taken away. And it's something that is...
Right, and not everybody who lives in a place that doesn't have electricity or doesn't have internet is living there consciously because they are wishing to forsake it. That's not the case. The people that I knew who lived where they lived were people who were my age, who were in junior high and high school, and it wasn't their option to live where they lived and to be without power and be without TV and other sorts of things. And so it wasn't their decision. It was someone else's decision that they were having to abide by. It doesn't mean that later maybe they didn't have the opportunity to move into town, but that doesn't change the fact that that's where they lived and it was not their decision.
No,
you know what? I had a lot of decisions that weren't mine when I was growing up. I didn't get to choose what religion I was, and I didn't get to choose where I got to live. But when I turned 18, I was able to move and I was able to do what I wanted to do. So it's hard to feel any sympathy for children. That's how their parents deemed to raise them. Well, that's their parents' decision. That's not our decision to make.
Yeah, I totally agree. Our own Port Wheatley has just announced that he's looking to finally move to somewhere that has broadband. How amazing is that? So we'll actually see him when we do shows. And thanks to your Patreon funds and stuff like that, the Northern Studio, which is where the Pocket and Gamer Show will come from, will also have the ability for live streaming and video as well as. He's chosen to move out. We thank our sponsors for the show, UK2.net. I've got to change this logo because it means all you lot can pull faces around the side of it when we're going through it. They're an internet firm. They will provide you with domains and co-location services and servers and dedicated servers. I made the video for the dedicated servers. Go along to UK2.net and do it via BritishTechNetwork.com and you'll save yourself a ton of cash because there's 20% off all domains and there's loads and loads of other deals that are on there. I think we've got about 7 or 8 offer codes that you can put in that will get you a heap of cash off. So check them out. Thanks for their support. They've been doing it for the last 4 years. And the Network Union, they are the people that give us the pipes into the BTN towers here so that we can do the live shows and we can upload all the stuff and push out our fantastic service to you. They will give you a great support if you're a BT broadband business customer. They provide a link. So what you've got is BT over here, you buy your service from them, and you're over here, and you've got a direct connection with them, and that never changes. What the Network Union do is provide an extra layer of support. So they'll make sure you've got the right package, they'll make sure you're getting the right service. What you should be getting in is what you're getting in. All of the things that you should be getting from BT Broadband, they will make sure that you're getting those as well, and they'll tweak your internal system as well to make sure that it works. Your WAN or your LAN, all of that stuff will work. They've got massive experience in large area WANs, and they will be absolutely brilliant for your business if you've got it. And they'll do anything from SMEs right the way up to huge universities, Paul. Give them a call.
Oh, huge universities.
Huge universities like your own. Network Union, thanks for their sponsorship. They've supported the Patreon thing as well as with a donation each month of $85. Very, very generous, as well as providing the broadband service into BTN Towers. And if you're Ian Ross, you should have sent me your address by now, mate. You've won. Ha, well done. Right, cool things. Mr. Holtzman, start us off with a cool thing, bud.
Well, this is actually kind of a very simple tool. And let me see if I can just copy it into the chat room here. It's being a tech, having to always open up these gadgets. A lot of gadgets now, laptops especially, are pressed together. Plastic is pressed together. It's easy to break the little clips, and people get a little screwdriver and they stick it in there and they gouge it all up, or sometimes they break the little clips. So there's a tool, a $7 tool from Amazon called the iSesame, which is a really thin steel pry tool, and you can use it for opening up, Apple devices. And it's a great tech tool if you're technically inclined and you want to open those gadgets up without marring them or damaging them in the process.
Currently unavailable, unfortunately.
Well, I'm sure it's available somewhere. I just threw that link in from...
They're out of stock by the looks, but there you go. A little tiny piece of plastic. You say
iSesamo. Sorry, I said it wrong. iSesamo.
$7 and works. And it works.
The beauty is in its simplicity.
Excellent job. $7 is a lot of money for a bit of plastic. Dude. Jesus. Saw you
it's
coming.
Steel.
Saw you coming. Oh, it's steel. All right, fair enough.
Used to open plastic.
Mr. Gamet, what do you have for us?
I'm going Star Wars on you this week. But I'm also going cooking and all domestic on you with this.
I know you're pissed.
Yes.
Are you sticking it in the chat room? Are you sticking it in the chat room?
Yeah, I'll stick it in the chat.
Because your video's frozen at this end, unfortunately, dude.
Oh my god.
Oh, good. I thought that was just me.
If you're showing something, then it's not coming up, so.
Oh, okay. This is what I'm trying to show you. This is my R2-D2 measuring cup and measuring spoon set that I got from Think Geek.
Excellent.
And all the pieces nest together to make a complete R2-D2. And when you pull them apart, each cup is tagged on the inside so that you know what the actual measurement is. And it's just this beautiful little R2-D2. And
that's beautiful.
His legs are the measuring spoons, and then his body and dome head make up the measuring cups.
And it's only $20.
And it's only $20.
Oh, unbelievable.
And it looks awesome sitting on my my kitchen counter.
Excellent. Good pick, sir. Excellent.
Am I still frozen?
Yeah, you're still frozen. Just restart your video for us. Paulie, what have you got for us?
Well, I think the last time I reviewed something from this company, my thing froze completely, and I never got to do it. So send me something else I'm going to put onto the site for review. The last thing I did with the Anker Astro 5600 milliamp hour battery, but they've sent me a 10,000 milliamp hour battery, which is this little bugger here, and that will charge your phone 10 times from cold.
Bloody hell.
And, nice.
And that's the size of, well, it's smaller than a Nokia 3310.
Yeah, but the best thing about it is not only is it for your iPhone, it's for Galaxy, any of your Android, but if it's got a USB port, basically plug it in there, it will charge. But I don't know if this is a feature for if you're lost at night, but if you're in bed and you don't want to charge, hold down the battery, there's a little torch in there. Tells you which way to put your thing in. But our British listeners, it's normally $74.99 on Amazon. I'll put the link in the chat room. Normally $74.99. Doing the rounds at the moment at $25.99.
Oh, that's a bit different.
Ooh.
Exactly.
The
10,000 milliamp hour battery.
The Anker Astro E3. Yeah. There we go.
I bought the 5600 milliamp hour battery, but 10,000 milliamp hour battery for £25.
And Prime is available.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. You will never, ever be without charge with this.
Excellent. Good pick, mate. Good pick.
Thank you.
Well done. Kelly, have you got anything for us?
I do. It's sort of an app and sort of a web service. So it's called Marvel. And the cool thing about it is that it lets you do interactive prototypes. So you can sketch out whatever your brilliant app idea is or whatever. And then once you've got a sketch, you can take a picture of it with the app on your phone, and then you can designate hotspots and then link to other things. So like if you print off a bunch of, say, iPhone templates, you could print them off and sketch up your app idea and then take a picture of it and then say, when you touch this part of the app, it takes you to this screen. And then you've drawn another screen you take a picture of, and then it will sort of walk through a really rough idea of what you want your app to be. And then you can share it with other people because you can upload it. And you can also do, you can share them with other people. And if you want to just create things in Photoshop, like if you're a Photoshop or an Illustrator person, that you can take that and then build something in Photoshop and just use that to upload the app as well. But a lot of people like to draw, like, you know, pencil take a pencil or, you know, maybe a napkin or whatever, you know, is handy and then be able to take a picture of it. So that's what the app does. But the service is totally free to sign up. And then you can download interface elements if you want to use a particular kind of icons or a particular style. There's a few packages of stuff you can download if you're an Adobe user that you can set up and build things and then make them interactive. And it's a really, really great way to prototype something, whether it's a website or an app or anything like that. All of this stuff is really, to use it is really cool. I've done a couple of lightweight things with it just to sort of get my point across on something. And it's really nice to not have to know a bunch of code or an app that I don't normally use, which would be basically anything from Adobe. Being able to sort of sketch that out and then go, okay, when you click here, it takes you to this screen. When you click down over here, it takes you to another screen. When you do this, you know, it goes over here, and be able to communicate an idea to somebody effectively. Cool. So I love it. It's totally free and the developers are super nice. And I think it's a very cool thing. So that's why it's my cool thing this week.
Very good. There's a lot out there that does that, but it's I think that's the only free one I've heard of. So very good. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Holtzman?
My website, www.carryholtzman.com, which actually just takes you over to my YouTube page where I have my my videos, my how-to videos and reviews.
Very good they are too, mate. Built a huge computer.
Yes, one series. I did. Yeah. Yeah, I think I was going to live in that.
Yeah, near enough. It was a TARDIS. Jeffrey, where are you, sir?
Well, I'm typically hiding out over at MacObserver.com and on Twitter and app.net, Jay Gamut, both places. And also at Fresh Brewed Tales, where I talk about all the stuff that I see happening in coffee shops. And on a whole slew of podcasts. Google me. You can find me.
Okay, excellent, mate. Where are you, Righty?
Paul is on Twitter, hang around at BritishTechNetwork.com, and thanks to everyone who's posted on the new Google Community Help blog as well.
Yeah, the help blog's going really well. It's got, we've got quite a few members. We only started it yesterday. So, or did we start yesterday or today?
Yeah, yesterday. But everyone's posting the question. It's a really good start.
And there's some really good answers as well that are coming in, which is nice. Well, good stuff. Get yourself in there. Go to Google Plus, and it's The Help Show is the community. And there's you can go there for answers or ask for questions, or you can go and give answers. It's up to you. And Kelly, where are you, Mrs.?
You can find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso. And you can find me hosting the Two Watt Talkcast on Sunday nights and on the occasional other podcasts here and there. And when I appear in other places, usually you can find out about it on Twitter or app.net.
Excellent. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back in tomorrow. There's also, as well, I'll be on Monday. I'll be at the London Mac User Group. So if you missed my Mac World presentation and you'd like to see it, I've had permission from Mac World Expo to deliver it to the London Mac User Group. It's about maximising OS X for photography. So get yourself along to the Old Explorer Pub near Oxford Circus and you can watch the presentation that I gave at Mac World, word for word. And also on June 2nd, of course, there'll be a keynote from Apple. And we've got a fantastic venue. The London Transport Museum have given us their theatre underneath the museum. And it's got 150 seats, something like that, the 25-foot screen in it. And you can come and watch the keynote live with us. And we'll be doing a podcast at the same time. And everyone's going to be involved. We're going to be broadcasting it out from there because there's actually really good Wi-Fi there, which is brilliant. So that's two things. Monday night at the Old Explorer Club if you want to see my presentation from Macworld. And it's the only place you'll be able to see it because I couldn't record it or anything. And the other one is June 2nd, the London Transport Museum. There's a huge event for the keynote and then we'll go for beer afterwards.
It can't be.
We'll see you next week. I'll back for Mac Show tomorrow and see you next week for Big Show. Thanks for listening.